From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Civil lawsuits today filed by the SEC and state regulators against mutual fund giant Putnam Investments and two of its senior fund managers. The complaint, securities fraud at the fifth largest mutual fund in the country. It's just the latest in a string of charges, firings, investigations, and scandal touching many of the biggest names in American investment. How big is the problem? 95 million Americans invest their rainy day savings and hard-earned retirement dollars in the $7 trillion mutual fund industry. Now, regulators are pulling back the sheets, and it's not pretty. The alleged offenses are illegal, borderline legal, unethical, late trading, market timing, money managers lining their own pockets and doing favors for big investors that experts say have cost all investors billions. Tonight on Point, scandal in the mutual fund industry and what it means for ordinary investors. Are you paying attention? Do you know how your trust and your dreams are being treated by your mutual fund? And how heavy should the penalties be for managers who abuse investor trust? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Tom Lauricella, who covers the mutual fund industry for the Wall Street Journal. Good evening and welcome, Tom.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. You've done a lot of great coverage in the last month of this. What's the scale of the scandal that's emerging here, Tom Lauricella? How widespread are the abuses that the SEC and state law enforcement officials are now looking at?
Well, when the news first broke back in early September of this investigation into mutual fund share trading practices by New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer, he made a number of comments contending that many of these practices that they were looking at were far more widespread than they would have ever have thought. And at the time, some people sort of doubted this, said, well, maybe he's just blowing this out of proportion. But as this has gone on, we're having almost daily revelations of different firms involved with different types of improprieties, ranging from small money managers to some of the biggest mutual fund companies in the country. I mean, these are massive companies that have millions of investors.
You're writing about investment research from Morningstar, Inc., now recommending that investors avoid in-house mutual funds run by really big names, Bank of America, Bank One, Janus Capital Group, Strong Capital, Fred Alger Management, and on and on. These really are big names. How did this happen? What's going on here, Tom?
Well, it seems that this is a case of the mutual fund industry sort of getting fat during the big bull market of the 1990s. People were rolling out mutual funds like crazy. They were pulling in all sorts of money. And then when the gravy train stopped, you saw we're seeing evidence that the salespeople really sort of took control, started cutting all sorts of deals. The fund companies weren't paying as much attention to their shareholders, who's their primary responsibility, and it's just something that people just weren't paying attention to their responsibilities, and it just sort of snowballed.
Flesh out the picture of what's been going on, maybe with Elliot Spitzer's first case against this big hedge fund, Canary. What happened in that case?
Essentially, what the Canary case involved is a big hedge fund, which are very sort of secretive investment pools, which was a major part of its strategy was to engage in very rapid short-term trading of mutual funds. We're talking a day or two or three at most. We're not talking about the concept of market timing as trying to pick tops and bottoms. This is a form of arbitrage, basically.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is that what these guys are doing is they're taking advantage of discrepancies between how funds are priced. It's a very basic premise, and this is something that's been around for decades.
Are you saying mutual funds have always done it?
No, it's always been it's always been something that people could do with mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to sort of the mutual funds are pools of securities. And one of the problems is trying to sort of value all these hundreds of securities. And smart people figured out a long time ago that the price you pay for the share of the fund doesn't always match up with what's going on inside the portfolio. And they could make bets that these prices would catch up.
So the mutual funds, in this case with Canary Capital, Bank of America, Bank One, Janus Capital, they were enabling Canary Capital to dive in, do these rapid trades, and make these gains that came at the expense of all investors, is that right?
Correct. And what they were doing was they were cutting deals to allow Canary in. And as part of these deals, what's been alleged is that these fund companies were profiting on other investments that Canary was making. So on the one hand, they were letting somebody in who was damaging their shareholders. On the other hand, they were profiting from this. The other part of this is something called late trading, which involves basically being able to place orders after the deadline.
Because mutual funds trade only once a day at 4
correct.
P.M.
They're only priced once a day at 4 p.m. If you put in an order after 4, you're supposed to get the next day's price. Otherwise, you could react to things that happen after the market closes that nobody else can react to.
But mutual fund companies have been giving that day's price to privileged investors.
So far, that we've come up with fewer instances of that happening as of this moment. But that's something that was a very big shock to a lot of people in the industry that was going on. Whereas market timing is something that people have known about, and the real problem is that the fund industry never did anything about it.
Now, is late trading illegal?
Late trading is flat out illegal.
And market timing is unethical, if not illegal.
Market timing is illegal. Now, the regulators are saying now, people like the SEC, that market timing can be illegal for the mutual fund company. If the mutual fund company permits people to do this trading in their funds and at the same time have rules that prohibit it, then that is illegal for the fund company to allow that to take place.
And then
that's sort of what we're seeing now today.
And then today we saw these charges, the civil lawsuits on the basis of fraud against Putnam Investments, fifth biggest mutual fund in the country. What exactly has been alleged there?
Well, this has really shocked and stunned a lot of people. Essentially, what has been alleged is that there are a number of mutual fund managers at Putnam who are market timing, who are doing this trading in their own mutual funds.
In that is their personal account.
For their personal accounts. And so essentially these fund managers who are legally bound to protect the interests of their shareholders, instead of protecting their shareholders, they were actually dipping into their funds and essentially sort of skimming these profits off by doing this sort of rapid short-term trading. The SEC said today that these managers, they've said there are six of them, made about $1 million trading Putnam funds over a five-year period.
And that essentially comes straight out of the pockets of all the investors, trusting them to be investing on their behalf.
Correct. The regulators and a lot of academics have said that the money that people make from doing this very short-term trading comes directly out of the pockets of the shareholders. So the argument can be made, and I think will be made by the regulators, that that $1 million that the Putnam managers made came straight from Putnam's investors. And the other part about this that has really got people upset is that Putnam did know that this trading was going on, and aside from telling the managers don't do this anymore, never did anything else. They never followed up on it. And in fact, we're finding out today that these managers, at least two of these managers, continued to do this trading even after they were told not to.
And now we read about some 80 mutual fund companies under subpoena by the SEC. Is this a full-out crisis in the mutual fund business, Tom?
You know, it's really the market timing is something that's been around for a long time, as I said, and many people had contended it was widespread. What's turned out to be the big surprise is that there were arrangements to allow people to do this market timing. And the SEC has said that at least half the fund companies that it's contacted had some form of arrangement. That suggests that this was a real serious problem out there. Fund companies not only were not doing enough to prevent this type of trading with hurt shareholders, they were actually enabling it. You can definitely use the word crisis here. People are there's a lot of damage that's being done out there,
and much more to come. It sounds like.
Unfortunately, that's sort of what we understand. I mean, there's many. You know, the original complaint by Elliott Spitzer's office named four fund companies. Since then, we've identified some others that have been involved. We've had some other firms, such as Federated Investors, coming out and saying that they were involved in this too. It seems like this is going to go on for a while, unfortunately.
Tom, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Tom Lauricella is the Wall Street Journal reporter who covers the mutual fund industry. I'm joined in the studio now by Tamar Frankel, law professor at Boston University, co-author of The Regulation of Money Managers. Good evening and welcome, Tamar Frankel.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. So you are looking out on all this, just like all the rest of us are, with some dismay. I mean, Americans have been told that if they want to watch out for their lives, their retirement, their futures, their children, they should jump in and become participants in the investment life of this country. Mutual funds are the way most ordinary Americans do that, the only way they can kind of reasonably do it. And here, even that vehicle now seems to have been, in some sense, corrupted. Is that too strong a word?
Maybe not, but I will go a little broader. It's not the particular activity that is so difficult to or so dangerous. It's the approach. It's the seeking for loopholes. It's trying to find something which is not absolutely illegal, which market timing was not. Is not today.
Though Tom Lorisell is saying it's now being interpreted as illegal in certain jurisdictions.
Yes, but it was, let me explain one thing. Mm-hmm. Market timing was really hurting managers who really wanted to manage for on behalf and for the benefit of their investors, because it didn't enable them to plan for the future so much.
The market timing is the quick trade,
the quick in and out. You didn't know. Do you have cash that you can invest? Mm-hmm. Or maybe all of a sudden you have investment that you and you need cash. So that is why most funds said in their prospectus, we do not allow it.
They said they didn't allow it, but in fact...
That is where the wrong comes. In fact, they have allowed it and benefited from it. So long as they said we don't allow it and didn't allow it, that was fine. Some of them said, you may do that, but it was said in the prospectus. You knew where you stood. But now the fraud is in saying one thing, doing another.
And the late timing, it appears to blatantly favor big investors over millions and millions of small investors.
Late timing is an illegal act.
And again, this is trading after the 4 p.m. close, but day's price. So if any new news comes in, that client can trade, put down a trade for the next day, and it's almost a giveaway. I mean, there's no challenge to that, but it's only given to a few enormous investors, hedge funds and others. Why would mutual funds put their credibility, their trust with millions of investors at risk to do that, Tamar Frankel?
It's hard for me to put my head in their head or to understand that. But I think there was for about 10 years an atmosphere that you try and do whatever you can, so long as you're not caught, you're okay. This was not the history of the mutual fund industry, and that is one of the things that is so shocking to me, for example. I followed this industry for a very long time, and I haven't seen that.
It was set up specifically to be a kind of safe vessel for smaller investors, wasn't it?
That was true. And since 1940, it was of that sort. The managers of mutual funds had a knee-jerk reaction whenever something like that would have been suggested. And that is what shocked people who have followed this industry and don't understand what happened
to these
people.
The knee-jerk reaction would have been to rectitude. It would have been straight up, buttoned up, let's do it right.
That's right. Never do anything like that.
And suddenly it seems to be going on, and going on in very large mutual fund companies.
Well, if you ask me, it is our culture maybe that has changed, and maybe that is what we ought to look at. After all, they are not the only ones.
Now, in fairness, this hasn't cost people their life savings. What it's cost them is some margin of additional gain that they should have, would have had on their investment if this had not been going on.
That is true, but I'm scared not of the particular losses now, yes? Mm-hmm. I'm scared that if it starts there, that place, at that point, it will go on. I haven't seen, and I don't think anybody has seen, embezzlement. But it's not far if we start with this.
Wow. We're talking about certainly a kind of corruption of the culture of mutual funds, the vessels for millions and millions of Americans' savings. You can join the conversation tonight. Have you assumed that mutual funds were a clean, safe haven for your hard-earned dollars? Is nothing sacred here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about scandal and SEC charges in the mutual fund industry, shady trading that has cost investors billions. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you afraid your mutual fund nest egg has taken a hit from shady trading? Do you trust the money managers handling your retirement savings? And did you dream that mutual fund managers were willing to shortchange you for personal gain or the gain of favored investors? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been talking in the studio tonight with Professor Tamar Frankel. She's a law professor at Boston University. We're joined now from Oxford, Mississippi, by Mercer Ballard. He's founder and CEO of Fund Democracy, an advocacy group for mutual fund shareholders. He's assistant professor of law at the University of Mississippi. Good evening and welcome, Mercer Ballard.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for joining us. You've been watching with all the rest of us. What do you make of the allegations that are coming out so far? How deep, how thoroughgoing is this problem?
Well, it's really a huge loss to the American financial services industry. Mutual funds, I believe, had a deserved reputation as being a relatively clean industry. And what's happened as a result of this scandal is that sterling brand has been lost. The question going forward, though, is what are we going to do to recover that brand? And the question is whether the industry, the SEC, and Congress will be up to that challenge.
Mr. Ballard, who was not watching the store when this was going on? Tamar Frankel has been raising issues about the culture of mutual funds that would permit this to happen. But if managers of big funds are sitting around after hours trading into their own pocket or reaching out to let big hedge funds or other big investors take advantage that small investors don't have, who's responsible for that?
Well, the party primarily responsible for regulating the industry is the Securities and Exchange Commission. And I was looking recently at a speech by a staff official at the SEC in which he was describing how large numbers of investors have been found to be going into funds to exploit stale prices. And as a result,
meaning that the
price at which the fund is sold, that mm-hmm. is the 4 o'clock price, mm-hmm. doesn't accurately reflect the value of the underlying securities.
Because circumstances change.
Exactly. Circumstances mm-hmm. have changed, for example, since the close of the Hong Kong exchange on which the fund securities may be trading.
Mm-hmm.
And the SEC found this and described these investors who had, in some cases, double-digit returns in a single day as a result of stale pricing. What's most shocking about it is that speech was given in 1997. And the SEC was very aware of the problem of stale pricing at that time. Since then, there have been numerous academic studies that have described stale pricing. There have been bulletin boards in which stale pricing has been routinely discussed. There have been personal finance articles describing it. I wrote two articles in thestreet.com describing mm-hmm. the problem. And in today's allegations, you see examples of 28 members of a New York Boilermakers Union making hundreds of trades every single year, one of whom made by himself over $1 million exploiting stale prices. With the kind of retail nature of this fraud, it's hard not to ask the question, what was the SEC thinking back in 1997 when it did not take affirmative steps to put a stop to the use of stale pricing?
Tamar Frankel, do you lay this at the doorstep of the SEC or at the managers, the top officials of these companies themselves? These are not ignorant people.
Well, it's I will add somebody else. Sure, the SEC may have been and should have been more strictly or regulating. However, the SEC needs money in order to regulate. When you compare what the SEC is getting to regulate an industry that is larger than the banks, and you make the comparison there, you'll be shocked to see how much they get as compared to...
You're saying they're just not equipped to take on this regulation.
The Congress has not given it enough of a budget to regulate. So we have to take that into consideration. So this is number one.
Mercer Ballard, what about the executives of the companies themselves, though? I mean, Tamar Frankel's pointing out there's a long tradition. Mutual funds are supposed to function to the benefit of their investors. How did that go off the rails?
Well, you know, on the fund side, funds are interesting vehicles in that they are really made up of a board of directors, and then they represent kind of a nexus of contracts with lots of different kinds of service providers. So you might have a contract with an investment manager, a shareholder servicing agent, a custodian, a transfer agent, and a broker-dealer, and each one might be a different entity. But all roads in the mutual fund world lead to the board of directors. And fund directors under the Investment Company Act are specifically tasked to ensure that funds fair value their securities in good faith. And that's where the failure really begins with respect to these frauds. And, you know, Tamar is exactly right. The SEC does not and has never had, and I think never will have, the resources to effectively police boards of directors and funds. And I think what is needed is the creation of a mutual fund oversight board that would be financed from assessments on mutual funds, appointed by the SEC, and have an examination and enforcement authority over mutual fund boards to make sure that they are ensuring their procedures in place to protect shareholders and following up and doing spot checks to make sure those procedures are working.
Russell Blair, isn't there something fundamentally galling about this? I mean, we've had lots of scandal in the world of finance in the last year, year and a half, but this is where ordinary Americans are supposed to be able to invest. Of course, they take a risk in being in the market at all, but they're not supposed to be afraid that they're being ripped off by the people who are managing their money. I mean, doesn't this go to the basic kind of contract with ordinary Americans who want to participate in the financial life of the country?
And that's exactly right. And it is particularly true with respect to mutual funds, which until recently were kind of the last bastion of integrity in the financial markets. And there's been a lot of skepticism in Wall Street as to the, you know, the clean image of mutual funds. I, for one, believed it, and I think it was the result of very effective regulation and the oversight by the SEC. What we need now is to take very strong, decisive measures to restore that sterling brand and get mutual funds back up on the plateau where they belong. But I'm not sure I'm seeing actions being taken by the SEC, by the industry, or by Congress that suggests that we're going to be able to achieve that.
That's a frightening thought. You would think it has to be done. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Charlie's calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Charlie. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a reasonably knowledgeable investor. I've done puts and calls and something stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how this transaction works and how it really favors a management individual as opposed to, you know, Joe investor.
Okay. Let's take it through carefully, step by step, and we'll do that, Charlie. Mercer Bullard, can you walk us again through each of these? Let's take late timing first. How exactly does it work to advantage one party and not the general investor?
Well, I would describe it as late trading, I think is the term most
often
used.
Excuse me, right.
And the best way to describe it is that the fund prices its portfolio at 4 p.m., and let's assume that it holds a lot of Microsoft stock.
Okay.
And then at 5 o'clock, Microsoft makes an announcement. It's got greater than expected earnings, or it's declaring a huge dividend. And everybody out there is wishing, boy, I wish I could buy Microsoft at the 4 o'clock price.
Mm-hmm. But it's too late.
It's too late, unless you have special access to one of these funds that allows late trading. What they were in effect doing is letting you buy the fund that holds that Microsoft at the 4 o'clock price as late as 7 or 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
So they would hold the door open for favored investors, and these would be very large investors?
They would be, in some cases, large investors. And I think this fraud is probably going to be found to be very limited to hedge funds and some of the larger investors.
So Charlie, our caller, if he had called in at 5 o'clock and said, I want to buy that at the 4 o'clock price, I mean, he wouldn't have a snowball's chance.
Not a chance.
But if the hedge fund called, in fact, the hedge funds did call and regularly and made these trades regularly, and you were saying made sometimes double-digit returns in a single day.
Well, now the double-digit returns, and this is where the real money is. The late trading, as you can imagine, is going to be fairly limited in scope because there's only so much information you can pick up between the close of the U.S. markets and 8 o'clock at night. The stale prices, though, is where academics have found the potential for billions of dollars in losses. And that's where Charlie, if he's interested, can actually make some money, because this was a fraud that was open to Joe Main Street and participated in, I believe, by thousands of retail investors.
And how did that work, Mercer?
Well, the way that works is the academics found that all you had to do was pick an international fund that was not working hard to update its prices. And every time the U.S. market had a nice jump at the end of the day, at 3:30, you buy that international fund. And over time, you'll have a guaranteed substantial return on your money with virtually no risk.
But again, this is for the kind of sharp investor. Mutual funds are supposed to be for the investor who goes in there for the long term, who's not trying to game it every day.
Right, exactly. And it's certainly supposed to be a product that's offered at an accurate net asset value. Because when it is not, if Charlie went in there and he exploited that stale price and then he sold the next day, the difference in the actual price and the actual value is money that comes right out of the pockets of the other shareholders in that fund.
And then market timing, the other problem here.
Market timing is probably the least of the issues. If to the extent you define market timing as just the act of going in and out of a fund quickly, it creates problems for the transfer agent because you've got to keep track of more transactions and fund shares. You've got to keep track of more money and decide whether it's going to be invested in the fund. If you invest it, you incur more commissions. And if the money goes out the next day, you reverse all that and you incur all of those costs again. So the main problem with market timing in and of itself is that it drives up costs. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. In fact, there are some funds that have as their business model servicing market timers. They have very high expense ratios, but everybody knows that going in, so it's not a problem.
We're reading here Richard Garland, CEO of the Janus International Division, sending this email to someone inside Janus who was complaining about it, saying it doesn't seem fair. He said, I have no interest in building a business around market timers, but at the same time, I do not want to turn away $10 to $20 million that Janus was going to make for permitting that.
Well, that was the attitude of a number of executives. I don't like market timers, but you show me the money and I'll open the door to them.
Charlie, are you still there?
I'm still here.
And how do you feel about your mutual fund investments? Do you really have any option?
Angry is an understatement.
Yeah, and fair enough. Charlie, thanks for your call tonight. Let's get another call. Deborah's calling from Hamilton, Massachusetts. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. My name is Deborah Brown, and I actually work in the mutual fund industry conducting mock regulatory audits for various size firms. And I wanted to call tonight to state my point, which actually I appreciate Mercer's point. And thank you for having this program because I think the education portion is very important.
Well, have you run into the kind of problems that are being gone after now by the SEC and state governments around the country?
I would say that from the role that I play is it's usually very proactive firms that have brought in and invested money in conducting a self-review all over the board.
I mean, so if you're there, they're most likely above board because they're paying you to be there?
Well, they're paying me to find anything before they had a problem with regulators.
But what about this culture that we're hearing about tonight that's permitted this in the last decade, something that would have been seen as abhorrent to mutual fund leaders earlier?
Well, I believe it's still abhorrent to mutual fund leaders. I was at a conference in Washington last week where there were directors, mutual fund directors present, and everyone universally felt that anyone committing late trading, that was a fraud, and they should be stopped immediately.
Then why is it going on? We've got subpoenas out to 80 mutual fund companies.
Well, in my view, I still believe it's a few bad apples. I don't believe this is an industry that has been very highly regulated. I have worked in it for 16 years. Everybody, for the most part, that I've seen have always tried to keep up with regulations. I think that there are a few bad apples, unfortunately, in business models that took advantage of less than ethical positions.
Well, maybe a few, but the numbers don't sound entirely small. But, Deborah, thank you for your call. We're joined now from Washington, D.C. by Tim Ford. He's Vice President for Strategic Planning at the Investment Company Institute, which represents investment companies. He's a former counsel to then-SEC Chairman Arthur Levitt. Good evening and welcome, Tim Ford.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for joining us. Tim Ford, a few bad apples or a systemic problem here in the mutual fund industry?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question. I think it's appealing, to folks, and I certainly can understand folks wanting to put a label on it. It is a profoundly serious problem. Whether it's systemic or not, I think maybe I'll let others address. We've clearly seen serious allegations at a significant number of firms. We're expecting to learn more, problems in the weeks ahead. I guess the question of systemic means, does the industry tolerate this? Is it rooted somewhere in the core, a part of the business? And my view of that is absolutely not. It's got to be dealt with and dealt with forcefully. So,
what do you think of the way the SEC and state governments are going after the problem? Are they addressing it in a way that's going to clean it up?
Well, there's a number of ways that they're addressing it. The industry has commended Attorney General Spitzer and the SEC for their vigorous enforcement, and we will continue to do that. The enforcement angle is extremely important. We think every allegation has to be tracked no matter where it leads. With respect to the regulatory side of it, that's a more of a challenge. And we have to figure out what the diagnosis is. What is what has caused this? Where are the parts of the regulatory fabric that need to be strengthened and addressed?
Does that mean having more SEC oversight, or does it mean self-regulation?
Well, we've historically not been fans of self-regulation. It's one of the both Professor Bullard and Professor Frankel have noted the unusual history of the industry in supporting strong regulation. We want direct regulation by the SEC and have supported increased resources for them. We're skeptical that self-regulation ultimately is going to pass the test of the most difficult challenges.
But Professor Frankel is saying tonight that the SEC simply doesn't have the resources to do it, and that there's a cultural problem that's seeped into the mutual fund industry. Do you have a generation of mutual fund officers, executives, that just don't have the right morals, that aren't cut out to run mutual funds?
I don't think so, Tom. I see a lot of our leaders, and I see words like abhorrent, shocked, appalled, disgraced.
But words are easy. We're talking about maybe $4 billion a year lost to investors that we're reading here. I mean, the words are easy to say, but these practices appear to have gone on widely.
Well, agreed, and these practices are very serious. One thing to talk about, and I believe that your guests will agree with this, when we're talking about market timing, and the arbitrage of these overseas mutual funds, mm-hmm. there is a distinction between funds that have been complicit in allowing this kind of activity to go on. I'm shocked by whatever that number is and disgusted by it, but we nevertheless have to deal with that, versus the activity itself where it's going on. There are many, many fund companies that have been vigorous in fighting this. Now, others may have ideas that they could have been even more vigorous, but nevertheless, they have tried to do it. Mm-hmm. There are many ways for market timers to evade detection, or once detected, to find a new route into the fund. Most particularly, there are things called omnibus accounts. It's one thing if any of us are direct investors with a fund company. We call an 800 number. We invest directly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But there are other folks who invest through brokers or through fund supermarkets or through 401k plans. Mutual fund companies do not know who those customers are and never see those accounts individually.
Tim Ford,
every day their actions are grouped together, and those can be very hard to root out.
Our time is short here. Let me ask you, reportedly subpoenas out to 80 mutual fund companies. What percentage of the mutual fund industry do you think has been touched by these practices that the SEC is now cracking down on?
Tom, that's very hard to say. I don't know. I know of the 80 getting requests for information or subpoenas. I'm not sure which. I've read a report that said a senior SEC official said that they believe half of the 80 firms that they've got information from had market timing agreements. And then it's also been reported that half of that number, which would be in the neighborhood of 20 to 25, may have had prospectus language that said they discouraged market timing.
Tim Ford, that's a big number. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Tim Ford with Investment Company Institute. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with more on mutual funds. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about scandal and SEC charges in the mutual fund industry, about shady trading that has cost investors billions. Not embezzlement, not theft, but shaving and trimming that's come right out of the pockets of the margins that would have been due to ordinary investors, perhaps to you. Did you dream that mutual fund managers were willing to shortchange you for personal gain or the gain of favored investors? And what kind of culture could have encouraged money managers to play fast and loose with mutual fund investments? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight are law professor Tamara Frankel of Boston University. She's co-author of The Regulation of Money Managers. And from Oxford, Mississippi, Mercer Bullard, founder and CEO of Fund Democracy, an advocacy group for mutual fund shareholders, and assistant professor of law at the University of Mississippi. Robert's calling right now from Spokane, Washington. Welcome, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm one of those common little people that's invested, diversified, got a few bucks in the market, but I don't find anything surprising about this at all. In fact, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg, and for somebody to say that it's just a few bad apples, I mean, just look around. We've been doing this social Darwinism for just years now, and I think I think that the culture is, if you're not doing this, you're a sucker. Look at all the corporations that go offshore to avoid taxes. I mean, it's them that has gifts, and screw the little guy. Take advantage of it now. Get what you can, and, you know, screw the little guy.
Robert, we've got it. Your phone's a little rough, but we appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. Mercer Ballard, what about that? You hear there a kind of just outright cynicism about the whole Wall Street project, but this is at the heart of the American economy. Is there a danger here, with this drumbeat of scandal, first in corporations and accounting firms and investment banks, and now in mutual funds, that Americans just get disillusioned with participation?
Well, I think it's a little different from the parade of frauds that we've seen over the last few years, because I think many Americans had already come to associate Wall Street with those kinds of frauds and weren't the slightest bit surprised by, for example, the latest allegations regarding analysts.
But our caller Robert is pulling that sheet right on across the mutual fund industry which people, I think, thought of as, well, there's at least a trustworthy safe haven.
Well, it certainly was, and the question is whether the situation can be saved so that we can at least still have one aspect of financial services where people have a fair amount of confidence that their money is safe or at least well managed. And I think that possibility is there. I think it takes immediate and forceful action, though, by regulators and Congress.
Tamar Frankel, on that point, should investors – I mean – investors' money is essentially safe. They're just not getting the return that they ought to get if this kind of shenanigans weren't going on at the margins. Isn't that right?
It is right, but if the shenanigans are the beginning, then I don't want even to begin to think where the end is going to be. And that's why these shenanigans have to be nipped in the bud right now. And I think that investors can do something about it.
What is that? What can they do? I mean, you don't have much choice but to get into a mutual fund if you want to participate in the stock market.
That is true. And I do not suggest that they withdraw from that. But I suggest that they write, first of all, to Congress and say, give the SEC the sufficient funds to really regulate, to really find out whether there is compliance of these large funds.
Bump and up the budget. Get those regulators in there on the books.
That's right. And the second thing is write to your mutual fund and say, you'd better clean your act and clean your mind, clean the way you think. It's my money, and don't you forget about it.
Otto's calling from Boston. Hi, Otto. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Good evening.
I work in the industry. I have been doing it for about 30 years. I've worked with some of the people that were on your call earlier. And I have to agree with Professor Frankel. Things like this do need to be nipped in the bud. But I think, what we're talking about here in terms of arbitrage and market timing is really sort of endemic of what we've seen in our society generally, which is a culture of greed that we've developed over the last few decades.
But Otto, shouldn't there be some fences, some boundaries that are understood as not to be transgressed?
Certainly. And the SEC's focus, and I'll come to the defense of the SEC as a person who's in the industry, the people there are very sincere and well-intentioned. I think Professor Frankel's right. They are not as well financed as they should be. And they have been looking at areas related to how do you pay for marking, how does a mutual fund pay for marking, rules that are called like 12b1 rules, and soft dollar brokerage practices.
But you're in the business, Otto. Do you see this as a few bad apples or the tip of an iceberg here?
I suspect I'm actually quite shocked. And yet, as I think about the span of an arc of my career and have observed the enormous pressures on business managers, investment advisors at brokerage firms who are all part of this equation, as well as in the mutual funds. There's enormous pressures to, make sales, move product, that type of thing. And what you see here is an aspect of that. And so my suspicion is that we are seeing the tip of the iceberg.
You know, Otto, here's something that shocked me reading in the Wall Street Journal today. that the guy who got this investigation going at Putnam, fifth largest mutual fund in the United States, I mean, that is big. It's a call center employee at Putnam Investments who said he went to state regulators after Putnam and the SEC didn't act on his complaints about heavy market timing trades. I mean, should mutual fund investors have to depend on a call center employee to raise these issues? Where are the top executives of these funds?
You're right. We shouldn't be depending on call center employees. And programs like Deborah Brown has in place for self-auditing, as well as other audit programs, I can tell you right now, are being substantially boosted to improve surveillance activities.
Probably now, as we speak, and that's a good thing.
As we speak. Oh, because I'm part of it. But, you know, the thing is, you can surveil as much as you want, and if some folks are in cahoots and are intent on gaming or actually defrauding the system, they're going to do what it takes to do that and cover it up.
Tamara Frankel, I see you waving your hand there.
Yes, because I think, in addition, you can't really supervise everybody if you have thousands of people. What you have to do is establish a culture within the organization to do that, and also create other incentive systems. Give people who are honest, not make them look like stupid people, but give them a real recognition, and then you won't have the need to have so many policemen.
Otto, get out there and do it, and thanks very much for your call. Jeff is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is twofold and is based on perception. A lot of the previous discussion has been about what the facts are and the extent of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm thinking about is, A, is it possible that people will take this seriously enough that they'll start pulling their money out of mutual funds and invest directly in stocks or other types of investments altogether, and mm-hmm. what effect will that have on the market potentially? And then going along with that, given that there's talk in Congress right now of privatizing Social Security and letting people take the investment into their own hands,
yeah.
And the average investor in this country is not really all that sophisticated. If they don't feel that they can turn to mutual funds.
Yeah, mutual funds are vital to that strategy, aren't they, Jeff?
Yeah, those are kill the initiative altogether.
Got it. Those are both great questions. Thanks so much for calling in. Mercer, how about it? First of all, have you seen, do you expect a substantial withdrawal of funds from mutual funds that people will get out of the market or try and invest directly in individual stocks? Or is that just beyond the capacity of the majority of American small investors?
Well, I don't think that will happen, and if it did, it would be extremely unfortunate. I think that for the vast majority of American investors, mutual funds are the best vehicle in which to invest, and buying stocks, individual stocks, is not a good path to take. And I can tell you from a compliance point of view, I would take a product offered by a mutual fund even today, any day, over a brokerage account offered by any of the major broker-dealers.
Because the broker can call you with any kind of deal under the sun and you don't know, you're saying.
That's right. I mean, it's not the brokers. It's not the mutual funds who are interrupting your dinner every night.
But part of the deal with the mutual fund industry was, yes, we'll give you our money and our trust, and we'll expect a very, very high level of responsibility in return. That seems to be where the breach is here.
And, you know, for many decades, I think that shareholders got a pretty good return on that promise. The question is this scandal going to ruin almost 70 years of a solid industry, or are we going to take the steps necessary to recover?
And we'll talk about those in just a minute, but I want to ask you about the Social Security question, which our caller raises. If mutual funds are the way most people are going to have to interact with the stock market, and if we're talking eventually about some kind of privatization of Social Security, do those things, Mitch, if people can't trust the mutual fund industry, what happens to retirement? What happens to the notion of privatization?
That's actually a very perceptive question by your caller, because it really goes directly to the viability of any privatization. Because if you can't make privatization work with the mutual fund structure, it cannot work. So one of the questions is, will Congress and the SEC step up to the plate here and show that they have the ability to deal with these mutual fund issues? Because if they don't, there's absolutely no basis for having any confidence that we can take the risk of having the privatization of Social Security fall into the hands of mutual funds or, for that matter, any other financial services company.
Jeff, thanks very much for calling in. Greg is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make the comment that I think this is a not just mutual fund, I'm beginning to see it in mutual funds, but a corporate problem where it seems to be now that if, as long as it's legal, do it. Whether it's ethical or moral, it doesn't enter into it. And I could give you a very quick example of watching what's happening with automobile financing, where they claim that they have 0% interest, but then in the small print it says there's a fee of $16.97 per thousand. That, to me, is interest, and that, to me, is a lie. It's not illegal, but it certainly isn't moral in my point of view.
But, Greg, shouldn't all the ballyhoo about the scandals of the last couple of years have begun to turn this around? I mean, wouldn't you be expecting American business to be pulling up its socks on these issues of propriety and proper and full accounting?
I really think, I'm a retired engineer, and I've been retired for a few years. And I'm kind of an activist sort of person, and every time I brought anything like this up, the standard response is, oh, what can I do, or, oh, well, what's the difference?
Well,
people are either too busy, or they don't realize that if they don't step up and say something, that we're going to be in serious trouble if we're not already.
Greg, we've got it. Thanks for your call. And Tamar Frankel is saying tonight, write to your congresspeople, write to your mutual fund, let them know what you think about it. Ryan's calling from Boston. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I actually work for a mutual fund company, and I
as several of our callers tonight have, I guess.
Yeah, and I've been following this pretty closely, and one of the issues that I run across is it's not clearly defined. I'm getting a lot of panic from the individual investor out there because they don't know the difference between market timing versus late day trading.
But neither of these are really supposed to be going on in any volume, are they, Ryan?
No, they're not, and that's another issue that needs to be brought out as well. And I think a lot of these charges they need to be brought out. I mean, I'm not denying that at all, but often it's overlooked at what the companies have done to try to stop this. And actually, I believe a caller before the break there mentioned it, where there are industries and people can sneak through, even though you do put strict stipulations on there.
So you're sticking up for the industry a bit and saying, look, there are people who are trying out there. I've got that. Our time is short. Thanks for your call. Mercer Bullard, how about it? Your advice to mutual fund investors on what ought to be done here?
Well, you know, there are more than a few bad apples here, but investors should remember there are a few very good apples. And, for example, Vanguard and Fidelity have been at the forefront of making sure that they're not using stale prices. And frankly, I'd be surprised if either one of them was implicated in the late trading scandals. So, you know, one thing to do is look for those companies that generally have lower than average fees, that have good shareholder relationships, and invest in them. And the companies that I've put on my list have so far weathered the last 8 weeks of the investigation, and I'm hoping that I come out of it with my recommendations unscathed. I'm not sure I will, but that's my hope.
There's a hope, knock wood. And Tamar Frankel, do you think that the uproar about this is going to turn this thing around?
You know that thinking is believing is hoping, and I would say I think so, because I think it is crucial to the industry, and there's too much at stake here.
Well, it's been great having both of you tonight. It's not a pretty picture, but let's hope it gets fixed up. Investors,
you
hear the advice from both these people. Mercer Bullard in Oxford, Mississippi, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Mercer Bullard is founder and CEO of Fund Democracy. And Tamar Frankel, great to have you sitting here, right here with me this evening. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Tamar Frankel, professor of law at Boston University. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.